This episode of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent. Need help with a project? Post it on Design Inc. and receive free proposals from the best designers, illustrators, and animators. Join the hundreds of companies and startups that have been connected with the perfect creative for their project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and start your project today.
Hey, welcome back to the Hustle Podcast. It's been about a month since I've been in the studio, so I'm sorry for not, putting more content out, but I've also been trying to make sure that, I don't get too far ahead of myself and make sure that the quality of these conversations are good. Plus, South by Southwest came in, just shat on everything that we were doing. So anyway, thanks for coming back to the show. Today, I'm here with one of my new friends that I've been excited to talk to for a while now. I'm here with Gabriel Valdivia. He's a product designer at a Facebook on the VR team, but he was telling me earlier that he would really rather everyone call him a Master Ninja Design Professor. So reach out to him on Twitter after this and let's get a thread going. So Gabriel, like I mentioned, is a designer on the Facebook team. He's the co-host of Red Time Podcast. I've listened to several of those shows. It's pretty damn good. He's also an active mentor, and he's a founder of a Facebook group, pronounced Impostores, I believe, which is a Facebook group aimed at connecting Latin American and Hispanic designers and have conversations with each other. Gabriel, thanks for being here. Why don't you say hello in a little bit?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been trying. I'm sorry, I've canceled on you like four times. So thanks for not losing faith.
I'm the needy girlfriend that keeps knocking on your door, and you finally have opened up for me.
Oh man, that's funny. So how did you and I meet anyway? Like I think Twitter is how we met. I believe.
Yeah. It's been a few months, I think. We have some friends in common, and we met through Twitter, which has been pretty awesome.
Yeah. Also, thanks for stopping by the VR panel at the Converge event we were doing before South by Southwest. We've got actually a lot of really great feedback on that. Well, let's talk about that a little bit later. First, why don't you say hello to our audience and say a little, let us know what you're up to right now.
Totally. Hello, Hustleites. Is that what you call them?
That's what we call them now.
I'm Gabe. I work on Facebook VR. Let's see about me. I have an accent, so, and unfortunately it's not a video podcast, there's no subtitle, so bear with me here. And I'm originally from Cuba, grew up in Costa Rica, and I've been working in tech for about 10 years now, so pumped to talk to you. I'm a fan of the podcast, so let's
all right, that's awesome. Yeah, so I don't know how many of you are familiar with the things that Facebook is doing in VR, but and I don't even know the extent of your involvement here, but I have a feeling that you were responsible or part of the team that's been working on a lot of the Facebook 360 project, and maybe the 360 photo stuff, from my understanding. This is kind of big shit right now. Everyone's talking about VR right now, right? I mean, for good reason. But I don't think that a lot of people actually have a whole lot of, either people have a lot of previous experience in it, or they have a lot of interest. But I don't know that many people, honestly, that are actually doing a lot of work in the VR space. What can you actually say about what you've been working on?
Sure. First of all, nothing we ever do at Facebook ever is the work of a single person, or even the vision of a single person. So I'm part of a larger team of designers, engineers, and PMs that deliver these things. But over the past year that I've been involved in the VR team, my experience prior to that was in some of the photos team at Facebook and around visual storytelling. That's something I'm really passionate about and spend some time at Facebook exploring. And naturally, when I joined the VR team, we had explored immersive media through 360 video and found ourselves creating some really delightful experiences with really high-end publishers, so like Lucasfilm and people creating 360 video in a way that we found really compelling. So we saw it as a natural kind of progression to make that more accessible to all of our users. And given my background in photos, I led the introduction of 360 photos on Facebook. And what that did is it gave everyone with a smartphone the ability to create VR content. Because we made the decision to make panoramas, render them in a sphere, and wrap them around you. And if you have a Gear VR, which you can actually view that panorama in VR.
Is that? I'm sorry to interrupt, but is that the limitation right now? You have to have Gear VR to view that.
So we at Facebook, that's the one of the headsets that we support so far for the mobile VR mm-hmm. space. There are other headsets that people use, but at Facebook, that's our main focus as of right now.
Yeah, but for those that don't have the headset, they can still view a 360 panorama. It's just not in a VR sort of setting, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, when people think of VR and immersive media, they think of walking into a new world and navigating through space. And that's super cool. But we found that there is a lot of value still in introducing immersive media in the devices that people own already, on their phones, and making it accessible to them that way and interesting to consume that way. So, we use the phone's gyroscope so that you can move your phone like a window into another world. And you can also pan around with your fingers. So even that's just a different way to consume immersive media.
Yeah. Okay. So before you were on the VR team, you were on the photos team. And when you learned that you're going to be on the VR team, how did you feel? I mean, was that scary for you, or were you actually pushing for that? Did you have any things that you were worried about your ability to create great design in a completely new realm?
Yeah, no, 100%. Right immediately before VR, I actually moved to London for a year to kickstart a product team around visual storytelling. And for a year, I worked in London to build that team and get it kind of set it up for success. And after that year ended, I was scheduled to come back to the States and join a different team. So around that time, I started to really get the itch for VR. I'm a big fan of film and video games as a medium, and VR was just gaining a lot of traction then, and I just kind of got really interested in that space. So I started researching on how to get involved, and found out that Unity is one of the tools that people use, and it's free. So I downloaded it and got a course in Udemy to learn how to use it, because Unity is a game engine that people have been using for years now to make games. So there's a lot of documentation available for people that want to get started. So I did, and it just so happened by chance that as I was transitioning to a new team, the VR team noticed this and reached out to me and said, "Hey, I noticed you're looking for a new team. You want we at the time the team was made out of very specialized skill sets. So there were only two other designers, and they came from a game design background and industrial design. Two fields that are very specific in terms of the skill sets that they need. And they had never really onboarded a person with a traditional product design background like me. So they asked me, we can try it out for 3 months. If by the end of the 3 months, if you haven't learned the tools and haven't figured out how to essentially be effective in the team, then we need to reconsider this. But that's really all I needed. All I wanted was a chance to play in that space. So I kind of took the opportunity to get really immersed in that world. And within a month, my manager was like, "Okay, all right, you can stay here." So yeah, that's kind of how I got onboarded.
Is that Facebook's philosophy in general, letting people test out teams and figure out where they are going to be happy and succeed? Or is that just kind of an edge case?
No, it's definitely not uncommon. I think in general, Facebook really focuses on making people feel like playing to people's strengths and interests. So if you feel unhappy with your team or feel like you could be more valuable in a different team, that is definitely something that people consider very often. And we often have hacker months where, you know, you spend a month in a new team trying to explore a new problem, and the team is kind of testing you out and you're testing out the team to see how that works out. In my case, they kind of made up this thing called Hack a Quarter, which wasn't a thing. But yeah, it happens quite often.
That's cool. So if it hadn't worked out for some reason, you would have probably found another home, you know, and what you're explaining to me almost seems pretty alien. And while you're explaining that, it made me think about other major transitions in my career. Like, for example, I remember I had worked on the web for 10 years and all of a sudden I was trying to do mobile stuff. And I actually found it quite simple, right? Like there was less screen real estate and I realized, oh, well, each screen has to do like one task. And I found it really easy to move quickly. And then I think over the last 5 years in general, I'm gonna make a general assumption here. The last 5 years has been about like less research and make apps and ship them and iterate on them. But then you have something like VR, which is quite the opposite. It feels to me at least like you have to, there's a lot of learning involved, or at least there's new context and in new, you know, new things you have to think about. Like at the conference, you guys are talking about like, you know, like, I don't know, like frame rates and stuff that can, you know, quote unquote, potentially affect people and, you know, all this other stuff you have to learn. Like how long in your opinion, like should, if someone was getting into the space, like how long of an investment on average do you think the average like great, you know, digital product designer is looking at to be effective on a VR team?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's still evolving. So VR as an industry is still kind of separate from product design as an industry, right? And the traditional app or software design kind of community. VR is mostly populated by people that are either film producers or game developers. And
hardware people too, right? I mean,
right, yeah, hardware people. And one thing that because it's so close to me, one thing that I've been really focused on for the past year that I've been in the VR team is to kind of merge those two industries, the product design and VR design industries into one. So I've spent a lot of time kind of leading the effort behind Facebook's VR resources site. And what that's facebook.design/VR. And what that does is that it gives people with a product design background a few resources for them to get started without really having to learn how to code or use the tools or really having to learn these new tools and really in a very complex way. And we also kind of publish a lot of articles into that site to kind of share what we've been learning with that community. And the idea is so that to help people transition from product design into VR design, because the product design field or community is so mature now. We're like in this golden age of prototyping, and you know, making an app now feels so natural. There's so many resources for us to use there, and we move really fast in that world. And I think it's a lot of talent waiting for that to be explored in VR. So we are, you know, as a company, and me personally, I'm really invested in helping people transition from traditional 2D product design into the VR world.
Okay, before I forget, can you repeat that URL so people can check that out?
Totally. That's facebook.design/VR.
Okay, I'm writing it down right now myself. Okay, so this seems to be something you're passionate about, helping people make that transition.
Totally.
I can think of a few other people that were also equally passionate. You know, Zeldman bringing your talent to the web. Remember that? Like,
yeah, definitely.
Maybe you need to talk to Zeldman about writing a book apart book. Wink, wink. taking your talent to virtual reality.
That's my dream.
You should do that. Yeah, I think, you know, and so my, okay, so my perspective on where this is going is more at a high level. You know, I run a business. I'm not like a practicing designer, but I see my people on my team and people around me, like everyone's definitely talking about this and there's no doubt about it. But I think like we both said earlier, making a web app, making a mobile app is fairly fast, right? With all the tools and resources we have. And I've seen a lot of people get really frustrated really quickly because of, you know, some of the learning curves like here. And maybe it's just because we're so used to being able to just figure it out really, you know, just hack something together using Bootstrap or, you know, like you just put something up really quickly that, you know, if we see ourselves, if you see a thing taking a couple of weeks, it's like, man, I suck, you know, but, and I'm not really sure if everyone really knows where to go for, go to learn. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's on stages. We're at a stage, like VR is really, really early right now. And, you know, it's been around for a few years, but we're still in a fairly kind of nascent state. And it takes a certain type of wiring of a person to be satisfied within that industry. You know, you mentioned this transition between careers, and that's actually something that I've done all the time. So I went to school for graphic design education was mostly around branding and marketing and print. And halfway through school, the iPhone came out, and I just got kind of, I fell in love with that field. So after graduating, I kind of pivoted to the mobile world. And after spending a few years there, I got a little bit seduced by the Internet of Things or the connected apps world. And I joined a company called Automatic to explore that. And after a few years doing that, then I got seduced by, you know, the social networks of the world and really large scale companies. So I joined Facebook. So to me, I'm always kind of like, I'm wired this way that I'm excited by new problems that are not quite figured out yet. And that's kind of where I thrive. And there's a lot of people like that in the VR community today.
I think the fear of God on the client services side of things is a little bit different because, you know, like maybe in a company like Facebook where you're working on your own products and there's systems in place to support people and help them learn, is a learning curve is a little bit more acceptable. But when a client comes to you and said, hey, I want your help figuring out this thing in VR, it's not so far in right field. It's in the real estate business. Like, can you help me do this? And then it all becomes this like terrifying thing. Like, how do you scope it? How do you price it? Like, and then I think just generally that there's more stress around it because then you're asking, you know, there's certain pressures like in deadlines and stuff. And I don't know, but I think that maybe, I guess what I'm seeing is on the client service side of that, like, we're trying to do that kind of work. And so the way that we're doing work in this area right now is just by using philosophies that like I use when I first started doing mobile, just like account for your handicap by just being flexible on cost and stuff like that. So that people that are trying to hire great designers to do this can get the great designers to do this, but both people have the flexibility and like the, you know, around the learning or unpredictable things that might arise.
Totally. Yeah. But that's such a great point. What I would say to that is that, you maybe lean into what you do know, right? We have, a lot of years of experience in developing a visual language for screen interfaces, you know, from desktop to now mobile. And, you know, that hasn't been in vain. There's a reason why everything around us is framed in a rectangle, right? Like we that's kind of how we perceive the world. And I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing that into VR. And as you think of VR, remember that it's a spectrum, right? There's all the way to the high end of the spectrum where you can actually walk around the world and interact with hand interactions. But there is a very accessible side of that spectrum that is a 360 photo or like a sphere-like side of the spectrum where you can just design flat planes and figure out ways to interact with the world that way. And that is sometimes very like it sometimes generates the same or similar kind of wow effect that people expect from VR just by being surrounded by that content.
That makes sense. And that totally makes sense why you guys would start with that on Facebook in the feed, where it starts to make this feel more normal, right? Like, and less like far out of reach, right? And that makes sense now. Yeah, I didn't really think about that, but yeah, you're right. And I think a lot of people can benefit from just those basic mechanics of you know, like learning how to. I mean, it seems like it's about asset generation. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just thinking in the way I'm thinking about it. It seems like it's about like learning the how to create the assets, like photography in a 360 scape, learning how to render 3D objects. And, you know, honestly, like back in when I first started in this industry, like, you know, designers were making things in Director. And a lot of times those interfaces that we were designing for CD-ROMs were 3D. And then that went to the Flash world for just a minute. And then a lot of designers sort of forgot those skill sets. So it's like, you know, we're kind of going back on the other side of that curve where it seems like we need to learn some of these other skills related to storytelling, like, you know, 3D and different kinds of photographer for one, but also just maybe auditory too, maybe sound, like maybe in addition,
huge, yeah.
Maybe to supplement that 360 video, like the sound of that, you know, waterfall or something, you know, like it helps you feel like you're there, you know.
Well, yeah, like I started saying, everything is, I don't believe anything, any product comes from out of a single person. I think it's all about teams and playing to each other's strengths. And I think in VR, you just have a bit more levers to pull. Like audio is huge in VR and really helps a lot with the immersion. And depending on what kind of experience you're trying to build, you can rely on like 3D artists and animators to kind of, you know, reinforce your design principles. But, you know, again, lean on the things you do know. I think when people think of VR, they usually think of experiences in VR. Like the classic thing is people think of VR interfaces and you think of like Minority Report, right? Or like Iron Man,
yeah.
Just like moving your hands around to do all the things. And, you know, sure enough, when I joined the VR team, that's the first thing I tried. I just put a giant grid of UI in front of me and try to move it around with my hands. And once you try it out, you find immediately why that's not the way we do things today, right? Like there are many that is inefficient. It is nausea inducing. It is like, it's just really hard to parse. And, you know, if you separate kind of creating a content or an experience from UI design or UX design, which is how to help people navigate through that content, right? Most of the apps that we make today are containers for content. Like if you think of something like Facebook or really most apps out there, you're not really responsible for creating the content that people consume, but you're responsible for creating the system that people use to navigate that content and interact with that content, and the tools for the content creators to you know, to feed into that system, and it's no different in VR. You're not creating the content. I mean, some people are, but I think there's room for designers to create the containers and the systems to navigate that content in VR as well.
All right, yeah, that makes sense. So I don't want to, like, you know, I know there's a lot of, you know, things for us to talk about, but I mean, this is the first time we've had any topics of VR on the show. So I really want to like really take advantage of this opportunity to speak with you, because you're really the only person that I know that's working on this in a company that has the resources and the means to actually make an impact on the world. And so first of all, thanks for even be willing to, you know, to share. I mean, it sounds like you're the kind of dude that likes to share. So that's great. But I do have a few questions for you. Some of these are questions that I'm sure you're used to answering all the time, but it'd be good to have here recorded. What do you feel like is the biggest opportunity for designers in between the VR and AR spaces? Do you think that, you know, like, do you think one, you know, one is more relevant than the other? Like, where should people focus? What kinds of products do you think companies will be making in the next 3 to 5 years in those spaces?
Yeah, I think for the next 3 to 5 years, VR will mostly be a commodity, luxury, like a escapism device for a small percentage of people. This will really kind of take off when AR technology gets there, and we can integrate it seamlessly with our phones and the technology we use every day. I think that's really when the revolution will happen. However, I think the skill set needed for AR from a design standpoint can be explored in the VR field today. So the problem with AR today is not lack of ideas or lack of design, but have actually technology that helps track objects in different lighting conditions and a whole myriad of technological hurdles we need to get through today, like displays and all these things. So in the meantime, the way I think about it is you can explore this spatial design world in the VR space by thinking about spaces, thinking in 3D, thinking in ergonomics and how everything kind of relates to each other. We can explore all those problems in VR today so that when technology is ready, we can just translate that into AR and really be impactful in that, in kind of that moment.
Yeah, that's interesting. When I was in Helsinki, I went to a Slush conference. Actually, I went to a lot of conferences this year because my role changed. And so I said, well, the first thing I want to do, since I know I'm getting back into sales, is seeing what the market looks like. So I went to Web Summit in Lisbon. And then I went to Slush in Helsinki. And it was way more than I expected, but I would say at the very least, like, it seemed like 10 to 15% of all the startups that were presenting or competing were in the AR VR space, which I really didn't predict.
That's awesome.
And it was quite amazing to, you know, like, some of the stuff was like, you know, I saw a company that made like a karaoke product, but it was like a virtual reality karaoke experience. Down to things that are more accessible, like tools for architects to be able to tour a work in progress without physically being there, and has someone put it to me, like, you know, being able to recreate this weird moment where one country and another country's military are hanging out together discussing the price of ordering a bunch of tanks, which I understand a lot of people do now by taking an iPad and on video and showing, this is what it looks like, this is a 360 view of it, and all of a sudden you can. You know, like, I mean, some of these things seem like they'll be happening immediately. And I met this company called Varjo. I don't know if I'm butchering that, but it's a Finnish company. One of the founders, I believe, is the, I could be completely wrong here or misunderstand, but I think he was one of the like lead industrial designers of the HoloLens. And they're creating, I mean, I can't say what it is because I signed an NDA, but they scratch the surface a little bit on their website, varjo.com, which is V-A-R-J-O. And I think you, Gabe, would be interested in checking this out. And so I also think everyone listening will be too, because they're looking at, like, you know, two different worlds. One is in virtual reality, another one is this mixed reality space.
That's awesome.
Anyway, in summary, what is a company like FunSize? How do we begin the transition of creating a new discipline just enough to be able to meet market demand in 3 to 5 years? Because that's where my brain is right now. Like every month, I'm thinking 3 years out, right? So are we at a point now where agency owners like myself need to be building these capabilities or not yet?
Interesting. I think you probably know more about that than I would. I think, I mean, it depends on your audience, right? If you're making pitch decks to try to sell, to really try to wow people and show the bleeding edge of something, I think VR seems like a good candidate for that. If you're making real estate websites, I think maybe VR might not be there quite yet. I think it depends really what you're trying to focus on. It really depends also if you are bought in with this idea that in the future, maybe not 3 years, but maybe in 5 years, if you are bought in with this idea that in 5 years, the world will rely less on screens and design will kind of like meld itself throughout many different devices and many different experiences with things like AI, voice interfaces, and things that go beyond the pixels. If you're bought into that kind of future, I think as a designer, it makes sense today to be familiarize yourself with that language. Like, what does it mean to design an interface when you don't have the construct of a phone around you, mm-hmm. right? Like, how do you create a stack? How do you create a grid? How do you go back from different modes? I think that those lessons are valuable today as we venture into this future. And I think, you know, it depends where you are personally in terms of like where you want to spend your time. Is it like very pragmatic today? What do people need today? I think if that's what you want to focus on, VR is still not a indispensable part of people's lives. But if you're excited about what the future could be and want to position yourself in a way where you are valuable in that future, then I think, you know, VR makes sense to explore.
Oh, that's awesome. So how are you helping people think about this future and get ready for it? You mentioned earlier that you're trying to help people make that transition. So what I mean, are you doing that through your Facebook group, or is this through just like, I mean, tell me more about that.
Sure. So there's a couple of sides to that. First being the Facebook, we are interested in connecting people to each other. That's really kind of what brings everyone together in this company. And we bring people together or connect people together mostly through the stories that they tell. And right now we use the tools we have available to tell those stories. We have a phone, so we take photos and videos. We have a keyboard, so we write the story using text. But I think we believe that the more authentic these stories are, the more valuable they can be. And we at the VR team believe that VR is one of the most authentic ways to tell a story. When you remove the frame, when you remove the decision of what to capture, and when you capture a moment, everything is captured. I think you bring people along with you and make them feel like they were there with you when you're telling a story. So two things happen there. You can kind of break the geographical barrier for connecting with other people. You know, you can be in the same, like in the virtual same place with other people, even though they are far away in real life, right? They can feel like they're right there next to you. And that's hugely powerful. And then there's this other dimension of time where you can feel like you're in a moment that happened in the past. So for example, I'm getting married in a couple months, and I get goosebumps every time I think about capturing that moment and making it available for my kids in 20 years so they can walk around my wedding.
Oh man, I haven't even thought about that. That's freaking insane, right?
Right. Yeah, it's this idea that you can capture a moment and make it deliver it to people as if they were there. And so the obvious thing is geography, but there's also time, right? And it's maybe it sounds a little Silicon Valley or whatever, but it's like pretty close to a time machine, right? You can feel like you're there, and if we can create ways for you to affect that environment and really interact with people in a way that is meaningful, we see that as adding a lot of value. And it's pretty aligned with the way we think about products at Facebook, right? We everything we make it so that people can feel closer together. So that's kind of how we try to help people through VR. Like, that's kind of like the overall vision.
Wow. I mean, my mind is going crazy right now, because you explaining the concept of you being able to relive your wedding and then your great, great, great grandkids being able to do the same. And that started making me think about all these other sort of parallels, like what will war reporting look like? Right. Like,
oh, definitely.
Like, and, you know, like, you know, news reporting and like being in a moment, like being able to see like something in something potentially horrifying or amazing. Right. Man.
I mean, that's only bounded by the tools we have today, right? Like you see a picture from, you know, the early 1900s, and it has some effect. Like, you're able to kind of transport yourself to that world a bit, or you see a painting of, you know, the Renaissance era, and you try to think how life was during that time. But I have yet to show VR to someone in its full glory, right? Showing VR where there's hand tracking and 6 degrees of freedom and positional tracking. If I have yet to do that to someone, and they come out of that experience and be like, "Nah, it's okay." Like, there's always a little bit, something that they notice from that experience that captures their imagination. And it might not be like fully fleshed out yet. Like, we might be really early in that nugget, but there is something. There's always like, they're like intrigued by it, no matter who it is, no matter how cynical they are, how skeptical they are of technology. And that, to me, that's the thing that I'm chasing, right? That intangibleness of that feeling. That's something that I only experience when I'm exposed to like the highest forms of art. So that's what gets me so jazzed about VR.
So this potentially changes the game for like Hollywood, right? Like, it's not just like game developers that are like putting you in an environment to you know, like this. It's now like Hollywood could potentially be creating these kinds of experiences. Like, you know, if you're watching a horror movie like The Conjuring, like, it's not just you're watching on a screen anymore. You're like there, right, in the room or something. I don't know. Like, I'm imagining that, I guess. You know, putting yourself like as a fly on the wall in any sort of, you know, story that's happening. I can't remember what VR experience it was, but I think it was a demo, I think. But you're going like room by room, but it's like a story unfolding. You can't really interact with the people, but you're like, you're participating in what's currently happening. And it was freaking terrifying. And then, I never really thought, honestly, that I would be that into like a lot of the VR games, but I really am. I'm not really that big of a gamer, honestly, but being in an environment where you're aware of everything around you and you're moving around, like, not only that, but like, I feel like, you know, doing that once a day, I'm quite literally getting a workout. I'll be sweating and working out, and maybe that's good for everyone to be moving around a little bit more and doing things. It's still weird to like, I still get a kick out of watching someone with a headset, like, you know, like floundering, like, you know, it's still kind of funny, you know, to like, you know, watch someone with a headset, but,
Yeah, I imagine we'll look back at the headsets today. Like, we look back at like the giant brick cell phones that people used to use in the 80s. You know, it's a victim of its time. We're still kind of developing what it means to consume in VR, right? Like, we've defined what that means at the movie theater, right? We have this format, which is around 2 hours, which is probably based on how long it takes for someone to, like, you know, digest a glass of Coke before they have to pee. Yeah, but the point is, like, now movies are 2 hours, and you don't question that. If I told you that a movie is 30 hours, you'd be like, oh, actually, I'm never watching that. And if I told you a movie was like 2 minutes, you know, you wouldn't think of it as a movie. So we've over time, we've kind of defined the language, what it is to see a movie. And even things like painting, there are galleries that you visit, and you're in a certain kind of state of mind when you experience those, and so on. And I think VR is no different. We're kind of developing what that vocabulary is today. You know, so right now, most experiences are about 20 minutes, and, you know, there's limited locomotion, given the limitations we have today. But I would expect all that to be experimented on over the next few years, so we can develop a proper language for it.
Wow. Well, we got to stay in touch and talk about this stuff, because I mean it's fascinating to me. And I mean, any time there's an opportunity to reinvent myself, I think I'm generally interested in exploring what that looks like. I think maybe as designers, we're not all the same. Like, you know, some of us though, like, want to like constantly evolve. You know, like, you know, after 10 years of designing for the web, like, if it wasn't for the invention of the smartphone, I probably would have switched careers. You know, if it wasn't now for the emerging, you know, conversational world and in augmented reality and virtual reality, I probably would lose interest in making mobile apps. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just, I'm fascinated with the ability to constantly change, you know.
Totally. Love it. You heard it here first. You're the Madonna of product design.
What does that mean?
Maybe it's an old reference. Madonna always changing, always reinventing herself.
Okay, sorry. It's took me a while to get that. Oh man. So, so what does the future look like for you? And you know, you have a fairly diverse background. You've chose this focus now. It seems like, at least for the short term, this is where you're living. Are you doing work outside of VR? Are you really focused on this? What are you hoping to accomplish in whatever this phase of your career as a designer is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the great things about VR is that the ceiling for feeling like I know what I'm doing is really, really, really high up there. So I have very little confidence that I'm close to being an expert in it. So that to me is exciting. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to explore in there. So I can see a long road ahead of me exploring that field and getting deeper and deeper into it. But more broadly, you know, being in VR over the past year or so, I've been really kind of appreciative of stepping outside of my comfort zone. And I really enjoy that. I enjoy what comes after you do that. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, it's true. So I like kind of like exposing myself to that and try to bring people along with me to that. So outside of VR, I have some side projects where, like for example, the podcast you mentioned at the beginning, where I try to explore topics that, you know, are typically not explored, and try to dig deeper than you know, a superficial, like, is that right or wrong, or is that good or bad or whatever, and try to explore things to the point where, like, more deeply, and because I feel like once you cross that threshold is when the real learnings come. So earlier last year, I did a project called Talk Turkey, where I interviewed a bunch of people and asked them pretty candid conversations about like anxiety and mental health, or you know, kind of things about their background that kind of forced them to step outside their comfort zone. And I really enjoy kind of those explorations.
Okay, so we got to talk about this real quick. You know, everyone's always looking for, like, everyone's, you know, all right, where can I find great things to listen to and hear? So we should talk about these things that you're doing. So first, Bread Time. Bread Time is your podcast. Tell us about the podcast. Let's do talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So my good friend Charlie Dietz, who works at WhatsApp, we've been working in the same kind of space for years, and we usually take a break every day around 4:30 or 5 p.m. And eat a snack and just catch up. And we're both kind of introverted, not the best public speakers. And earlier this year, we wanted to work on that. We wanted to explore how we can get more comfortable in our own skin talking about things in public. And we found ourselves talking about different subjects every day. So we thought, well, what if we just, you know, bring, like, record these conversations and release them and try to generate a broader conversation with a broader community after that. So that's what we've been doing. Every episode is really short, 15, 20 minutes. They're all about a different topic. we have a discussion about something like the last thing we did, the release actually today was about a future that is not so reliant on the cloud. We talked about like, it's usually about design and technology, and we try to explore those subjects.
One of those is real, like, I don't know if it's the recent one, but it might be, but I thought it was interesting. You guys are talking about, well, what is the future of the OS and where does that live? Like, is it in the cloud? Is it on a MacBook in an iMac? Or is it like, maybe is it on a phone? And then everything else is just like a screen to that, you know?
Totally.
It's interesting.
Yeah, totally.
You know, for something that seems so casual, I've listened to 4 of these episodes. It's great.
Thanks, man.
And I don't know how you're doing this. Like, it looks like you're releasing an episode about every 2 to 4 days.
Yeah, two episodes a week, yeah.
That's crazy, man. I mean, you know how hard it is for me to just release one? Like, Well, I guess you're not scheduling guests, so that's the hardest part. But I don't know how you're doing that.
Here's the thing, man. If you just lower your quality threshold, you can ship like crazy. Like if you just like make shitty things, you can do as many of them as you want.
That's going to be the title of this episode: make a lot of shitty things fast. Maybe no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean. I don't know, like a lot of people, this is completely unrelated, but a lot of people come to me and they're like, well, how are you making the show? And I will tell them and I will give them advice, but just like we were talking about before we started, the tools that I'm using, we've been using for about 3 years now. There's a lot of tools available now.
Totally.
Yeah. If anyone's starting a podcast, you guys should reach out to Gabriel and ask him to share with you the tools that he's using. It seems a lot more accessible than you might think. Check out his podcast, Bread Time. That sounds like you guys are having a good time, and it's great. Now, but what I didn't know about was Talk Turkey. What's Talk Turkey? Like, where can we find Talk Turkey?
You can find Talk Turkey at talkturkey.chat. And it came from an idea I had to create interviews with designers that went beyond the pixels and really talked about the motivations behind their designs. I found myself like working on these things, like working on really like visual tweaks, or like you can really reduce what we do to like just like making the shape of a button or something like that. But behind it, everyone really has kind of like a life goal behind it. They want to change the world somehow by it, and they have like just bigger aspirations than making a button. So I wanted to dig into that, like what people think beyond the details of their work. But what it turned into was a conversation that we were able to dig into, kind of like really candid topics. So, like I mentioned, that we talked about what it means to be authentic. That was like the first one. I talked to some people about the role of women in tech and how we can create a more inclusive environment. We talked about meditation and the role that plays in someone's well-being. And I tried to use a different format for it. And I made all the interviews through text message, through iMessage or Messenger or something like that. And I had a little bit of fun with the design of the site where we skinned it like a Messenger thread. So it felt like you're somebody grabbed my phone and saw all my messages with my friends. And they're kind of like, it's kind of like a voyeuristic thing where they peek in through something that's pretty candid.
Yeah. I'm looking at this right now. And that's what I was about to say. It feels like you are able to read a conversation on other people's phones or something. And this is quite awesome. There's a lot of cool people on here too. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, the way you present it, I think it's cool. Is this a project you're still working on, or is it, you know, which is pretty time you're done?
Let's say that I wrapped up season one. I've thought about bringing season two sometime in the future. Like you said, the hard thing is bringing guests in or people to interview in, and in this case, make them comfortable enough to talk about something that's pretty candid, you know, in a public light. And that's not easy to do, especially with people that I don't know, like with strangers, not my friends. So I need to figure out how to resume this, but I'm pretty proud of what we ended up making. You know, there's about a dozen conversations in there, and they all kind of tackle a different topic in a way that I feel is really valuable and gives you some insight about people's lives.
That's pretty neat. I mean, I love how you even like, you know, you have get notified about recent interviews. I mean, this is pretty cool, man. I can't believe I didn't know about this. Yeah. Okay. So that's talkturkey.chat. Check that out. So yeah, Gabriel. So, anything that you want to, you know, you want to say to those out there that are, venturing in the space that you're about, that you're working in?
Into VR?
Yeah.
I would just encourage everyone to be as open as they can. The VR community is really, really small, and there are not a lot of designers in there, or there are not a lot of people with traditional product design background in it. So those of us who are there try to keep, like, share knowledge as much as we can without breaking NDAs.
Yeah.
And I really like that about it. And so if you're thinking about kind of like stepping into that world, or if you're already in that world, you know, kind of lean into that community. But like, there's a few of us that are super eager to talk to anybody who's interested in joining. And if you are already there, we want to hear your learnings. We want to kind of like share how we approach certain problems, because it's so early. Like, there are no conventions, right? We don't, like, the simplest thing, like, we don't know how to scroll in VR. Like, the simplest interaction, we don't know how to create a feed.
Right.
Like, we have an idea, and we made some attempts at it, but there's no, like, definitive solution yet. So
it's an awesome interaction design problem, right? Like, you know, being able to create whole new paradigms for navigating these spaces. My fear in it, though, is that everyone will have different navigational paradigms, you know? That there won't be any standards.
I'm a bit of an optimist. I think everything kind of eventually kind of irons itself out, and the best solution rises up to the top. But that is definitely the dream, right? If you're working in VR right now, you could be the guy or gal that creates pinch to zoom in VR. Something so ubiquitous that you don't think about, that, you know, gets adopted by every sort of platform in that industry.
Sometimes people forget that it was a small design team that built the paradigm of albums, sort of you looking 3D and shifting across a horizontal spectrum that Apple purchased, that became, like, you know, that changed the way we thought about carousels forever, you know?
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, Gabriel, thanks for making time to come on the Hustle Podcast. It's awesome to catch up with you. I'll be in Menlo Park in a couple of weeks. We should get together.
Let's do it.
So Gabriel, let everyone know how they can find you on the interwebs, and hopefully people will reach out.
Yeah, my full name, if you can spell it, Gabriel Valdivia. That's with a V. But yeah, you can. That's GabrielValdivia.com is my website. On Twitter, at Gabriel Valdivia. That's pretty much everywhere. Just reach out to me and say hello.
All right. Thanks, Gabe. Thanks for tuning in to the Hustle Podcast. We'll see you next time. Hustle is made by Funsize, a digital design agency that works with inspiring product teams around the world. Learn more about us at funsize.co. This season of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent and receive free proposals for your project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and get started today. If you're a designer and you'd like to join, you can apply at designinc.com/apply. Also, thanks to Graveyard Teeth for the music and Black River Audio for mixing the show.